Well, we come to week number three, God's plan to grow something greater in you by the work of His Spirit. You have verses that are there in your bulletin that are provided for you, so just leave that open and we'll work through them together. Jesus said, "Come to me, all you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you, because I am humble and gentle of heart. You'll find rest for your souls. For my way is easy to bear, and the burden that I give you is light." Anybody here, Jesus says, anybody here exhausted, inside and out, spent, worn out? He says that whenever this happens, and by the way, this happens to all of us at some point, he says you can bring that part of yourself to him and he will teach you a new way to live. Now, he assures us that he will be our mentor, that he will instruct us on how to live freely and lightly. Now, there's a paradox to this, because you no more than sign up for these lessons and you find out that in this invitation to live lighter and freer, that these lessons are hard and frustrating and painful. Because learning from Jesus a new way to live is not learning ideas, concepts, and doctrines about God, but it is learning life change. Now, change, I like the notion of it. I don't necessarily always want to do it. But here's what appeals to me: the idea that things don't have to stay as they are. That I don't have to remain stuck. But even though change is a really awesome idea, it is also really hard. Now, we're talking as a church this entire summer about spiritual growth, spiritual changing, and what does it look like and how do we do it? Jesus offers this life, but he says that the life that he offers requires the changing of me. And we have discovered that there are two me's. There's a me 1.0 and a me 2.0. There's the me that Jesus promises, but there's the me, the reality of me as I currently am. And there exists between this 1.0 and 2.0 this distance, this gap. And so we ask the question, how do I close that gap? How do I get to me 2.0? We come to believe that we close that gap. That is what is called Christian growth. That I just bear down, I just get with the program and get her done. More effort and greater commitment. And as Dr. Phil asked, how's that working for you? Because it just leads to disappointment and craziness. The only way that a person can come to God is through Jesus Christ, by grace, through faith. Only way. But we've also established that the only way that we grow and change is by grace alone. The only way I get from 1.0 to 2.0 is by grace. And this transformation, while promised and longed for by every single one of us, is hard and it is difficult. It doesn't come easily. President Obama, on his first run, he had a platform of hope and change. But going from sloganeering to reality, we all know those are two entirely different worlds, because there are all kinds of obstacles to change. You know, the experts tell us that most of us don't even want change. Well, we want change, we just don't want to do change. That really is true. The greater percentage of us, statistically, would rather just remain as things are unchanged than to change the work that is involved in change. We run into the fear. We don't know what's ahead. We don't know what the different change would look like. There's doubt, there's bad thinking, and old habits. And we set out for change, and we're working hard at it, but it doesn't take long until we wonder, am I making any forward progress at all? Well, I want to talk for a few moments about this reality, the hope of, and yet at the same time, the difficulty of change. Here is a universal growth truth. Change is hard. And the thought will come to every single one of us at some point, and it's usually in the secret place of our heart, why is it that I'm the only one who struggles so deeply with change? Well, welcome to the club. We're going to talk about how and where we get stuck and how we move through. Now, I had a great idea that I attempted to do. I was going to illustrate it. It was going to be awesome, and it didn't work. So I need your imagination, all right? So I got some plastic wrap, and I was going to get Marvin up here and start to wrap him, and I got some plastic wrap, and it was a stupid idea. So anyway, but so imagine that Marvin was here, and I had some plastic wrap. And just a picture of sin, the junk, the struggle of life, as this plastic wrap began to wrap around him. And a couple of wraps around him, and it's only tight. It's not restrictive. But just give it time. Because it won't be long if you continue to wrap that he can't move. And it's a picture of what happens to the human life, is we settle for that picture. Sin and its subtlety works in our lives to wrap and constrict. But here's the most destructive thing about sin. It convinces you, it wants you to believe that change for you is impossible. We set out on the I'm going to try real hard program, and we realize that that's going to be no long-term answer. And yet we are entangled. We can't get free on our own. And we realize I have got to find a power greater than myself if I'm going to change. But how does this work? How does this get done? I mean, I recognize this can take a lot of God, but what is my part? Do I play any part? Do I just sit and wait? How does this work? And Philippians 2, years ago, was so helpful to me in my own asking of that question. Dear friends, you always followed my instructions when I was with you. And now that I'm away, it's even more important. Work hard to show the results of your salvation. Obey God with deep reverence and fear, for God is working in you. Aren't you glad for that today? And he is the one who is giving you the desire and the power to do what he pleases. So how much is this God and how much is of this is me? And the answer is yes. Yeah, it is all of God. And it is all of me. It is all of him working his life in me. And I am cooperating and working out that salvation that he places inside me. It's a little bit like a dance. There are two partners, and one leads and one follows, and they must move in step with one another. And if you've ever seen people who dance together, I mean, really know how to lead and follow, it is a thing of grace and unbelievable beauty. I watched most of the season a couple years ago of Dancing with the Stars. Now, that would not typically be a program that I would be inclined towards, but I was so captivated because there were two Hall of Fame athletes that were on that I had watched their entire pro career. And I can remember thinking, what in the name of cheese are they doing on this program? I just thought this is the cheesiest thing I've ever. So I had to watch. Oh, man of cheese that I am. And I'll never forget these two iconic, heroic athletes. And here's this little female dance partner who is the lead. And I can remember her grabbing them by the face and say, listen, your athletic career is over. In this studio, I'm the lead. Do you get it? You follow me. And I remember them interviewing both of these athletes. And it wasn't like a coordinated conversation, but both of them said, this is the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life. I have never done anything more taxing physically and mentally. And what was hardest of all, they said, is I feel so awkward. See, on the playing field, I'd done it my whole life. I knew how to move. I knew what to do, but not here. I feel clumsy. I feel awkward. It's embarrassing, they said. Well, change is no different. Because, see, we've got to learn to dance to God's grace in our lives. We look this morning for a moment at David, who is the shepherd, this warrior, this king, this leader, the one after God's heart. And yet even David got wrapped up and stuck in ego and lust, in ambition, deceit, betrayal, and murder. And there is no way that the Try Harder program is going to change any of this mess. His only hope is to throw himself on the mercy of God and to learn to dance, the dance of grace. So if you take your bulletins with me, both north and south, and we're going to read, it's going to take us a moment, but we're going to read Psalm 51. All right, would you follow along? Have mercy on me, O God, because of your unfailing love. Because of your great compassion, blot out the stain of my sins. Wash me clean from my guilt. Purify me from my sin. For I recognize my rebellion. It haunts me day and night. Against you and you alone have I sinned. I have done what is evil in your sight. You will be proved right in what you say, and your judgment against me is just. For I was born a sinner, yes, from the moment my mother conceived me. But you desire honesty from the womb, teaching me wisdom even there. Purify me from my sins, and I will be clean. Wash me, and I will be whiter than snow. Oh, give me back my joy again. I'm broken now. Now let me rejoice. Don't keep looking at my sins. Remove the stain of my guilt. Create in me a clean heart, O God. Renew a loyal spirit in me. Do not banish your presence from me, and don't take your Holy Spirit from me. Restore to me the joy of my salvation, and give me a willing spirit, a want to that will obey you. Then, Lord, I will teach your ways to rebels, and they will return to you. Forgive me for shedding blood, O God, who saves. Then I will joyfully sing of your forgiveness. Unseal my lips, O Lord, that my mouth may praise you. You do not desire a sacrifice, or I would offer one. You do not want a burnt offering. The sacrifice you desire is a broken spirit, because this God you will not reject, a broken and a repentant heart, O God. We'll stop right there. Now, I think David teaches us four steps in this dance of grace that lead us to change by the power of God's Spirit. The first is this. It is the acknowledgement or the recognition of my condition. David says, I'm trapped. And when you read this, there is no lack of clarity for David. Now, what I want you to notice, that he does not blame, he does not talk about his background, his family, his wife, or a lack of one. He does not talk about friends or a lack of opportunity. But there is this refreshingly scary, raw kind of honesty. And here's why. You will never change what you will not name. You will never change what you will not name. Now see, my first natural instinct is to say nothing, or if I say anything at all, it will be but it'll be justifying, it'll be rationalizing. It will deny, it will cover, I will avoid, I'll run at all cost. Because, see, me is described, not Adam and Eve, but me is described in Genesis chapter 3. And we read that and we almost kind of snicker. It's like, I mean, it's a laughable kind of cover-up that we read and think, this program's never going to work. How could they, we say to ourselves. See, there are always two options, and only one leads to change. There is honesty, or there is cover-up. And the second option never, ever, ever, ever works. To every dad, you are either entering the process or some of it are far beyond it. You know the painstaking work of drilling down on your kids to convince them that cover-up will never be a successful thing for them. Never. And yet, what is it about our kids? What's their problem? They try this again and again and again, believing that somehow this is a brilliant strategy. And yet, you cycle back again, and you want to explain them. The reason why you are stuck is because you're stupid. And you are stupid because you are trying the cover-up deal one more time. See, kids have to learn that you never get unstuck by dancing around sin. Sin's power is only diminished and weakened when it is named, when it is confessed. So the first step in this dance of grace that leads to change is I've got to name my sin, and it is not in some kind of generality, but it is in specific. And the first step makes the second one possible. The second step is that I then come to be a receiver of God's recovering grace. And it's at this point that we step into the light. And it's like those athletes, as they explain, you feel so exposed. You feel so vulnerable. But see, we make this discovery that the God of grace is waiting for us all along. We don't step alone. And we find that he is more good and more kind and more loving than we could have ever hoped for, because David answers this: if you get out in the light, in the weakness, and your brokenness is shown, what will happen for you? This God never, never rejects anyone in their weakness, in their brokenness. Now, that's not the way this world works. We exploit any kind of weakness. I remember one of the most tender, tender appointments I've ever had in 40 years being a part of this church was a high school junior who came to see me several years ago. And I remember I sort of knew him. I knew the family, but I didn't know him very well. And he came in, and he was so articulate and so in touch, but he had both physical and learning disabilities that he struggled with his whole life. And as we began to talk, there were some things he wanted to talk about. But he told me about the pain of his very clear weakness. And he said, most of my schooling, he said, kids would just be purposefully cruel to me. They would tease me. They would mock me. They would knock things that I was carrying out of my hands. And I thought, what a world we live in. Where, boy, we learn early, don't let there be any kind of even a whisper of weakness or brokenness. And the saddest thing is that can rule many kinds of churches. But see, we're a part of a different kingdom. See, you can't put that. See, here's our God. My grace is all you need. My power works best in your weakness. So now Paul says, I am glad to boast about my weaknesses so that the power of Christ can work through me. See, only in God. His grace is more than sufficient. It's more than enough for you. For his unfailing love towards those who fear him is as great as the height of the heavens above the earth. He's removed our sins as far as the east is from the west. Oh, we've all heard the verse. And it can feel, but wait a minute, David's sin is horrific. People are dead. An infant is not alive. A great heroic warrior is dead because of this man. I mean, we just throw grace around. East and west, it's all removed. And it seems like the Bible is minimizing sin. But what the Bible is doing, it is setting the sufficient grace of our God in Jesus Christ next to sin. And in the shadow of that, it is so small. Because see, in the dance of grace that leads to change, God's grace becomes the main event and not your sin. And somebody today is here and you are stuck because you are living as though the main event is your sin. But what you have come to hear is that his gracious, powerful, life-changing, eternity-altering salvation, that is the main event today. And the gospel trumps your every sin, past, present, and future. Therefore, anyone who is in this moment in Jesus Christ, there is no condemnation for you this day. None for you whatsoever. which leads to the third step. The dance requires, oh, I love this, a willing spirit. Not a perfect one. Do you notice that David is not pledging anything? He is not, I swear, I promise from this moment forward, cross my heart and hope to die, stick a needle in my eye. See, because even though we become recipients of grace, there are still mistakes ahead of us. Life will not be perfect from this confession on. And so he prays for a willing spirit. See, what you learn is that you can't dance without this. The dance stops. And as I thought about this passage, I realized, listen, maybe this is just my confession and it's not yours. I hope you're further along than I am. I just, most of the time, I don't want to. Oh, I can have flashes of brilliance. I mean, but they're flashes. I mean, in this moment, I really want to. And 5 minutes from now, I could care less. I have got to have a work of God's Spirit gracing me to even want to. Jesus would ask those who were obviously sick what seems like a kind of a dumb question. Are you willing? Would you like to be well? And their answer determined his involvement. And if they said, well, you know, yeah, I got a little banged up, but I saw the doctor and he said he can patch me up. And with a little bit of physical rehab, I can be as good as new in not long. See, Jesus asked, do you want to get well? Here's what's important. No one can want change for you. I can't be willing for you. It's why change is always in the singular and never in the plural. I can't, in fact, one of the great definitions of codependency is that I want a life for you more than you want a life for you. See, no one can do or want change for you. He prays for a willing spirit and not a perfect one. I asked myself this question, Mark, what does willingness look like? And here's my answer. It looks like rehab. Now, let me tell you why I give that answer. I have someone in my life who I've been walking with for quite some time. And they have a great struggle, very struck, stuck. The plastic wrap is around them very tight. And they have gone to rehab. I don't have enough fingers and toes to give you how many times. And they won't stay. They're just not willing. And the last time I was with them, they were giving me their spiel again of how they wanted to get well, blah, blah, blah. I just said, you're a liar. Because you won't. See, rehab is only as effective as you're willing to show up and do the work. Now, I feel like a very, very special dad today. It was about 7.5 years ago that my wife and I did an intervention on our son, Luke, now 34. And his life was ravaged by alcohol and drugs. And we were finally able to find him, and we did an intervention. And he went immediately to a rehab that we had called, hoping that he would go. And so he went for a week of detox and then for a 30-day program. And I remember the one question that Arlene and I asked each other, is Luke willing? Because that's what we were more concerned about than anything. So we went, because it was a distance away, we would go every couple of days, and we were part of a family process that was really hard but really awesome. And in that process, the people who were working with Luke, they said to me, I don't know if I've ever met a man more willing to do the work than Luke. He doesn't resist anything. Everything we ask him to do, he does. So he finished rehab, and he didn't have anywhere. He's coming home with us, which we were grateful for. But here was the question again, is Luke willing? So they asked, when he left, they asked him, we want you to do at least 90 meetings in 90 days. Luke did, at no prompt by anybody, he did 200 meetings in 90 days, literally. I don't mean figuratively, literally, 200 meetings in 90 days. How come? Because he was willing. God had given him a willing spirit. He got home, and his phone that he had given to me, which, a phone represents your world. It's all your context. It's all your stuff. And together, he asked me, we literally, physically broke that phone. How come? Because he was willing. See, only God heals, but a willing spirit is the thing that keeps you on the dance floor. Fourth and final step is we become stewards of grace. And it's in this step that we turn outward. See, you learn in AA that the final step is not that you get sober, but that you help another person get sober. Because the dance of grace always ends in a life that is teaching other people how to dance. We become freedom fighters for one another. And the greatest personal freedom, the greatest personal change comes when you become a bringer of, a steward of grace for others. So here's the question today. Who are you fighting for? And lastly, the dance of grace is never finished. So to all the CA community, just keep dancing. Keep growing and keep changing, because we are always in process. One awkward, clumsy, difficult, and hard step at a time. And remember who is your dance partner. It is Jesus. So let him lead. Anybody burned out, anybody weary, anybody exhausted, anybody disillusioned on the inside, Jesus says, come and dance with me, and I will show you how to live. Number one thing is keep your eye on the lead. There is no one like Jesus. He is the one who specializes in growing and changing you, and therefore, my friend, there is hope for every single one of us. We can get unwrapped because his grace is more than sufficient for you.